It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. Good evening to the FM Talk 106.5 listening audience. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr. I am your Chief Accountability Advocate, and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the third episode of our second season. We're really, really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. In studio, we have three fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Ms. Aquilyn Kennedy, Executive Producer and Chief Brand Strategist for Kennedy for Alabama.
Good afternoon.
The second is Mr. Levy King, President and CEO of Coached Up, a keynote speaking professional development and training company headquartered in Mobile, Alabama.
Good evening.
The third is Ms. Lauren Burroughs, Diversity Coordinator from the University of South Alabama College of Medicine, who will be joining us in the bottom half of the hour. And finally, completing our all-star team is Mr. Phil Bush, who is working the production board and doing a fantastic job of keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding polished and professional. Hey, everybody. How you guys doing this evening?
Doing well.
Fantastic.
How are you guys?
It's Friday.
Good, good. No real complaints at all. So, Aquilyn, tell me something good.
You know what? God is good all the time.
All the time.
And all the time.
God is good.
Yes, always. You know, we have some really great opportunities to learn more about our candidates this week. There are three events happening and possibly more. So I'm going to encourage everyone to take a look and look for all your great information online. The first one I want to share with you is an event on Tuesday, the 21st, 6 o'clock at Dauphin Way United Methodist Church, sponsored by the League of Women Voters and also co-sponsored by NAACP and Arise. And that event is happening to just get people connected and learn more about with our legislators.
Mm-hmm.
The second is with Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. Of course, dear to my heart. And very excited. A lot of collaboration happening there as well. Delta Theta Omega Chapter has partnered with a number of other organizations, including the NAACP, the Mobile League of Women Voters, Revelation Missionary Baptist Church, and the library, the Mobile Public Library, to have a wonderful event. Also, I'm sorry, the Port City Chapter of Blacks in Government. So my apologies for that.
Okay.
I'm really excited about that. That's happening on Wednesday at 6 o'clock right there at Bernheim Hall in downtown. And really excited about that. So you'll hear all about that. And then the third one is over there in Baldwin County. So the Baldwin County of Realtors is hosting an event, just learning all about the candidates. So please come out, take a look online. You can find more information.
One of the things that I've loved about the time that I've been at home is the number of opportunities that exist to connect with either people running for office or people who are currently in office serving in legislative positions. So that's a fantastic lineup. It's going to be ramping up as we head to the through the primary season. So definitely take an opportunity to meet and greet people if you have that. The other thing that I want to add under the umbrella of Tell Me Something Good is, you know, my lovely wife will never, ever brag on herself. But earlier today, she won an award as the Rookie of the Month.
Oh, yes.
The newest financial advisor, I think is the correct term that I'm supposed to use now. So
not quite the advisor, but financial services professional, just to be very, very clear.
Okay. All right.
But
thank you
I appreciate
for correcting me.
Nope. Retirement and all that good stuff. Thank you. That was very sweet of you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And then for both of the ladies who are with us tonight, are members of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, and they just celebrated their Founders Day on the 15th of January.
We did.
So
thank
congratulations
you.
To all the ladies of AKA Sorority Incorporated. Now for the agenda. In the top half of the hour, we'll review a few headlines and introduce tonight's discussion topic. We'll do our first citizen spotlight with Mr. Levy King and continue the conversation with our telephone callers and texters. In the bottom half of the hour, we'll do a second citizen spotlight with Mr. Wren Burroughs and continue the conversation with our guest in studio and on the phone until we run out of time at the top of the hour. In terms of the headlines, the first headline comes from AL.com. It reads, "Demolition at Hand for Mobile's Josephine Allen Complex." It was written by Lawrence Specker and published on the 14th of January, 2020. What did the author say? Roughly a decade after a Mobile housing project was shut down and left to crumble, city leaders gathered on Tuesday to celebrate the imminent start of demolition work. City Council President LaVon Manzi, whose District 1 includes the site north of downtown Mobile near the city's border with Pritchard, said he'd attended countless community meetings in the Plateau Africatown area where the top question had been the timetable for clearing the Josephine Allen property. The second headline for tonight's show comes from WKRG.com. The headline reads, "Mississippi upholds 12-year sentence for cell phone in jail." The article was written by the Associated Press and published on 16 January 2020. What did the author say? The Mississippi Supreme Court's confirmation of a 12-year prison sentence for an African-American man who carried his mobile phone into a county jail is being slammed as a brutal example of racial injustice. The final headline for tonight's program comes from AL.com. It reads, "The Alabama Supreme Court denies Birmingham's request to reconsider Confederate Monument's case." The article was written by Mike Carson and published today, 17th of January, 2020. What did the author say? The Alabama Supreme Court denied the city of Birmingham's request for a rehearing on the court's decision that the city broke the law when it covered a Confederate monument in Linn Park. So with that, we're going to go off to our first break, and then we will come back and introduce tonight's discussion topic.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Lines are open at 251-343-0106. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. So immediately prior to the break, we went through a few headlines that were on the news waves during the middle part of the week. And that brings us to tonight's discussion topic, which is reflecting on the dreamer and the dream yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So with that, Levy, what do you think?
Well, Brother Kennedy, I tell you, what a great question, number one, I tell you. And I think it's something that should actually encourage reflection on where we stand today, not just only in the African-American community, but our nation as a whole.
Absolutely.
Because let's just be honest, Dr. King's dream wasn't just for a single group of people. It was for the entire nation. Mm-hmm. And I think at times people forget that.
Right.
They think it's only for African-Americans, which I believe if a person has that type of mindset, they're detached from the dream, which that wasn't its purpose in the first place. So,
of course.
Listen, I know we've come a long way, and I say that collectively because
right.
the generation prior to me and prior to that has come further than I have. But in our present day, we still have these struggles. And I can tell from the time of my first years of marriage and 22 years ago where we were as a nation and
yep.
collectively as a people, we're still trudging forward, brother. We still have a ways to go, and I believe – it begins with personal accountability.
Okay. All right.
And I think that's one of the things we need to focus on when we're talking about the dream.
Okay. So let's pause for just a second on that, take a step back, and just remind the listening audience, for people who may not have listened to Kennedy for Alabama, just a little bit about your background, just where you grew up and where you went to church and all that kind of good stuff.
Native Mobilian.
Okay.
Grew up in the neighborhood of Crichton. Went to graduated from the wonderful institution of Shaw High School.
John S. Shaw.
Listen,
High
let's
School.
Not forget the S.
Let's
I tell
not forget
you.
It at all.
And after that, I matriculated to the Marine Corps for 4 years. I served with distinction for 4 years, and then I returned home and went to attended Fort University and earned my undergrad and my grad there.
Okay.
Following that, married. And entered the professional sector, different levels. And now today, as you've mentioned before, I own a professional development company.
Okay.
We focus on developing culture with individuals and organizations alike. And we are a company who we want to help people realize their worth. And that comes through professional development. So that's what we do in the name of the company. Again, it's Coached Up.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And also, you are one of our lead sponsors.
Thank you, sir.
And we want to take the opportunity to thank you publicly for your support.
Thank you.
Because we know we could not be on the airwaves if it wasn't for the wonderful things that our sponsors do for us. Now, one of the things that you do under the umbrella of your company is you actually are a professional keynote speaker.
Yes, that's one of the services
we offer. And I know from conversations that we've had before that you have actually done keynote speeches in celebration of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday.
Yes, I have.
And so as you've gone through that process of researching the life of Dr. Martin Luther King and reflecting on the dreamer and the dream, just kind of tell us a little bit about what you learned by going through that process.
Well, of course, there are so many levels to our history.
Mm-hmm.
But when we specifically reflect on Dr. King and what his initiative was circled around, what I learned about those heroes that are known and also those that are also unknown, because
okay.
there were so many people who contributed
right.
That we would never know their actual names. But the one thing I learned about Dr. King and those in the struggle and those today is we are a resilient people.
We are indeed.
I believe, you know, in order to succeed and in order to continue to move forward, through my studies, resiliency continued to float up.
Mm-hmm.
Resiliency, that getting knocked down and stepping back up, you know, and not allowing someone to tell you what you can and can't do. But also that resiliency coupled with understanding the reality that some of that resiliency could actually lead to loss of life.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, of course, we know the times. We know that in those times when people were marching for their rights, it was commonplace to be murdered, to die.
Mm-hmm.
But today, I think, has been watered down because we
really?
Can stand. Well, because okay. we're not worried about our lives per se. You know,
okay.
I can stand and speak on what I believe. I can take a stand if I so choose. And the percentages of death is much lower than it was in the 50s and 60s and so forth and so on,
okay.
because it's just a different time now.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that still teaches us resiliency because even though we have these rights, there are still people who are fighting against the rights that we've earned collectively as a people.
So let me pause you for a second. I'm going to go back to yesterday. So yesterday morning, I appeared on the Mobile Mornings with Sean Sullivan.
Great job, by the way, sir.
Thank you for that. And what we did was we analyzed a political commercial that was put on the airways by Representative Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, we started to unpeel the onion around Colin Kaepernick.
Yes.
And his silent protest of the national anthem because of the issue of the relationship between African Americans and law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
particularly being treated in a way that was inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this topic bears a little bit of exploration under the umbrella of the conversation that we're having now because it centers around protest. And so as we've talked about on air previously and privately, that Dr. King
mm-hmm.
came to national prominence based upon his leadership role in protest.
Very true.
And when we talk about what it means to be American, protest is quintessentially American.
It's how we got here.
And so it's always interesting to see how people want to push back on the protest without ever taking the time to analyze the motivation behind it.
I agree. But I think if people took a step back, for instance,
okay.
You know, a revolt, protesting. Well, what did the Englanders do? They protested. They mm-hmm. revolted. They didn't want to be under the king's rule anymore. Okay.
Right.
So henceforth, United States of America, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if people were to really sit back and study history, they would realize that's how this nation was formed, through protesting and through a revolt.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is this. People are okay with protesting, Robert, as long as it doesn't step on their toes.
But isn't that the whole purpose
but
of
the point
protest?
Is this. Yeah, I understand that. But now we live in a society where everything It's so delicate, Robert.
Okay.
Now, we're dealing with the delicacy. It's not just one issue. Now there's so many.
Right.
You see, even though when they were protesting, they were all protesting for the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there are so many different injustices, I'll be honest with you,
okay,
that are prevalent in our nation. Now the dichotomy has changed, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, and you said something yesterday morning that I fully agree with. Something can be about race, but
right,
it doesn't have to be racial.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So
right,
so I think we're okay with speaking on race, but there's that sensitivity with racial issues, okay?
Okay.
But you have to speak on those things in order to overcome them. You can't
right,
ignore them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And just because you don't see something the way I see it, let's talk about it. Let's have a conversation.
Right.
But so few people are willing to have a healthy dialogue about their differences,
mm-hmm,
about their when they see things differently. You see, what I like about confrontation is beauty comes from confrontation,
okay,
because it forces you to communicate. And when you do that, usually you can find some type of common ground. We're more alike than unlike.
So I actually want to go back to this topic and kind of tie it to the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So as we were saying before, he came to national prominence because of his leadership role in the Montgomery bus boycott.
Mm-hmm.
Based upon the teachings of Gandhi,
mm-hmm,
the decision that he made was that the protest was going to be nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the parallel that I usually put along with Colin Kaepernick's, was the protest was silent and the
mm-hmm,
protest was nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
But the root cause of the protest was the idea of injustice.
Very much so.
And so that's one of the things that I think when people are trying to define activity as un-American, it warrants us collectively challenging it. Because until we get to the point that we start to address the underlying causes,
the injustice, yes,
we always run the risk of being somewhat dismissive.
But you know what I find is when it comes to the flag, and listen, military, respect the flag,
love it,
without
stand
a shadow
up
of a doubt, okay,
no doubt about it.
But I also understand that just because my not standing doesn't necessarily mean that I am disrespecting the flag, okay?
Okay.
But collectively, America feels as though if you don't stand, you are going 100% contrary to what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always factual, okay?
Right.
And of course, when we speak on these things, usually when someone is pushing back or challenging, it's because they've been touched personally by a certain aspect or an
okay,
item.
Right.
And when you're touched by something, hopefully you're moved to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
Peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
He's never done anything threatening.
Right.
from what I can reflect on and remember. So he's always been from a position of peace.
Right.
He just wants to bring awareness.
Right.
The reason why he's doing this is to bring awareness to a larger picture than most people even know that actually exists.
Right.
When we live in our different silos and we don't connect with other people who don't look like us,
mm-hmm,
don't come from the same background as we do, it puts you in a position where I truly believe you don't have a peripheral vision. Your
right,
view is straight linear. So when you start seeing things that you're not accustomed to, it brings about fear. And when people are fearful, the first thing they do is want to be argumentative.
So as you said that, there were actually two things that popped into my mind. Two conversations that I had, both within the last 2 weeks, dealing with topics that are racial in nature. One of the calls that I got was actually from one of my white classmates from the Naval Academy, who was having some time a challenge interacting with some black aviators that he had met earlier throughout the course of his career that were not Naval Academy graduates. And they were talking about an issue, and he couldn't quite get his head around the reason why they were reacting to him with such an amount of vitriol. And the word that he used that stuck in my mind was this concept of the benefit of the doubt. And so he couldn't understand how, given the relationship that they had had together, that they would think that his reaction to something would be racist. He couldn't conceptualize
mm-hmm,
that. And so what I explained to him was, while I wasn't in the specifics of the conversation,
mm-hmm,
that there's a common point at which things start to spin out of control, and that typically occurs when people's feelings are being dismissed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's the way that I feel about this issue, particularly within the African-American community, when it comes to law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
This notion that somehow the things that we experienced are being dismissed. as if they didn't actually happen.
I get that.
So what I was explaining to him was I pulled the whole conversation up a level, and I was suggesting to him the benefit of the doubt that he is requesting from those African-American aviators is the same benefit of the doubt he should be providing to them when it is that they're sharing their experiences of
– I fully agree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think people should have a 360-degree view.
Okay.
When it comes to issues that may be prevalent, when something arises, what we need to do is we need to step back, and we need to say, listen, first of all, am I looking at this issue through rose-colored glasses?
Okay.
And so many times people do because, number one, a lot of people don't want to come out of their comfort zones. It's what they're comfortable with. And when you push them and they feel as though they're getting closer to that boundary of stepping outside of their zones, then they become ultimately protective of what they own.
Right.
And when you try to take something from someone that belongs to them, hence something that the things that they only know, well, now that protective flight comes in, and now you have a situation where people are aggressive.
Right.
And that aggression comes across in poor communication. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when that poor communication comes across, now maybe I didn't quite understand what you were trying to say or what you were trying to convey to me. Now we've got an issue that we need to sit down and really work out. With police, my issue with, and I'll tell anyone, my issue with our men and our women in blue is we need to work hard at building relationships.
Okay.
If we worked harder at building relationships, it's not about you rushing into a neighborhood and having preconceived notions. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just because I live in this neighborhood, maybe I don't do the things that some people may do in this neighborhood.
Right.
So treat me differently. Come in with precaution, as you should.
As
okay.
You
understand
should.
That because it could be a volatile situation. But understand one thing. We're not all the same.
And picking up off of that, the specific example that I used when we were talking yesterday was the Waffle House incident with Ms. Shakisha Clements and how the disorderly conduct charge that she was initially found guilty of was overturned on appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the amount of press when the initial guilty verdict was levied compared to the amount of press that happened after it was overturned, it was night and day. And one thing that Attorney Fox, who was the attorney who represented her, said during his opening statement that resonated with me was the problem that law enforcement had in that particular situation is that they had already picked a side before they walked in. And so as I mentioned to Sean Sullivan yesterday, it still kind of boggles my mind how a person can be guilty of resisting arrest if the underlying charge is invalid. But this, if nothing else, shows an opportunity for law enforcement to do better.
I agree.
Because even if subsequent to that, now you have people come back, issue that apology, say we made a mistake or whatever, that goes a long way to actually building relationships.
I agree.
So with that, that is going to take us to the bottom half of the hour break. Do you have a few more minutes to spend with us?
Be happy to.
All right. We'll see you on the other side.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do, and don't you ever forget that.
And now, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just joining the show, Mr. Levy King and I have been reflecting on the dreamer and the dream, and we just had a really good conversation here during the first half hour about kind of where we are and how some of the contemporary issues of the day and how folks are reacting to them are very consistent with how Dr. King addressed the issue of nonviolent protest. So Levy, before we transition on to our second citizen spotlight with our next guest, take a little bit of time and just reflect on where we are today. And I'm thinking this in terms of our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents, just where we are now and how if they were still with us, they would feel about how much progress we have made. Any thoughts to share on that?
Well, briefly, I believe that they would be proud when it comes to the level of education that we have as a whole nowadays. You know, we're gaining more education at a very high speed. So I think they would be very proud of that fact. I believe that they would be proud of the nucleus of the family. As well nowadays,
yes.
I believe that education that we're all gaining is actually building stronger African-American families. I also believe they would be very excited about the entrepreneurship. There are so many African-American entrepreneurs growing every single day. So I think those are some things that they would smile down upon us on. But I also think there are some things that they would be disappointed in. I think that we as a collective unit, as a people, we're not as unified as we should be. And I'll give an example.
You're about to open up a whole can of worms.
Listen, that's why you brought me here, brother.
That's what I did, indeed.
So, you know, I'll give you a brief example, and I'm sure that most of us in this room could probably have our own personal stories as well. But this morning, I am at my daughter's school. She attends Clark Shaw, and she was receiving her A honor roll certificate, Daddy Loves You. But she was doing such a great job, and I was there, and there was a person sitting next to me, a white man, and I sat next to him, and then on the left side of me, there was a black man. The white man spoke to me and with just such cheerfulness, and of course, I speak to everybody that I usually come in contact with, but when I spoke to the African-American gentleman, he looked as though, why are you speaking to me?
Was he from New York?
I'm assuming he was a Mobilian, Robert. But again, you know, you don't know me. And the point is this: why are we so aggressive within our own communities?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we so protective? Why are we so abrasive with one another? And I believe it's because I think some of us view others as have and have nots, Robert.
Okay.
And if you're viewed as a have, which I'm so far from it, but you may be treated differently. It doesn't matter. We've got to work on ourselves internally before we can never begin to be appreciated externally by anyone else. So I think that's an area that our forefathers, our grandmothers, and our grandfathers would be disappointed in, because it took unity to get us to where we are today.
Very, very astute observation. So, Levy, thank you for your thoughts and your perspective on the dreamer and the dream. But right now, what we're going to do is we're going to transition to our second citizen for our second citizen spotlight and welcome Miss Loren Burrows to the mic. Loren, how you doing?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Robert.
I am so glad that you're here. I know we were talking earlier, either this week or last week, when we had an opportunity to get on the phone. And I was really excited about you coming in particular, because one of the things that we've been dedicated to here at Kennedy for Alabama is really just taking the time to highlight service. And we know from the experiences that Levy and I share that it's one type of experience to be able to spend time representing your country in uniform, but there are lots of different experiences that may not always be highlighted the way that they should be. So thank you so much for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
Before we get into that, why don't you tell the listening audience just a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, church, et cetera.
Gotcha. Hello, everyone. My name is Loren. I am a native Mobilian, just like Mr. Levy King, born and raised in Mobile. I was raised in the Maysville area.
Okay.
And I was fortunate enough and had parents and grandparents with the forethought enough to circumvent some of my educational pathways.
Okay.
I was able to go to Lyonkoff Elementary School, then I went to Clark Magnet School, and then graduated from S.S. Murphy High School.
Okay.
And I'm so privileged to be a product of the Mobile County Public School System.
Yes, but all three of us are.
Definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm. Mobile born and raised.
All right. And where did you go to undergrad? And then tell me about what you did afterwards.
Absolutely. So I finished my undergraduate degree at the University of South Alabama,
okay.
Go Jags. After that, as do many college students, had a period of finding myself. I went from college to paid work, just trying to make ends meet, trying to figure out the whole college debt thing, how I was going to finance that. I began to seek out more professionally in line paths.
Okay.
So I then started and served as an AmeriCorps VISTA.
Yes.
And basically that is akin to the domestic Peace Corps.
Okay.
So with AmeriCorps, I served and worked in an organization called Big Brothers Big Sisters of South Alabama here in Mobile. I worked at helping students in the school system be matched with mentors in the community.
Oh, wow.
And I did that for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And then between that and another phase of my life, I interned briefly at the Clinton Foundation in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay.
And at that time, I was helping with health policy and inadequacies in the healthcare system in Little Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And then found myself at the Peace Corps. So I am a returned Peace Corps volunteer, very proud of that. I served in Botswana.
Okay.
Which is a small democratic country north of South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Served there from 2016 to 2018.
Okay.
Came back to Mobile July of 2018, and then I started working at the University of South Alabama.
Okay.
So life has a way of coming full circle. And mm-hmm. I am there now working as the diversity coordinator within the USA College of Medicine. So I am someone who has service at the heart of what I do, both professionally and personally, and have been for a while.
And since we are in congratulatory mode tonight, we understand that you have recently received a designation as one of the top 40 under 40, if memory serves me correctly.
I think I saw that somewhere. I think I did. Thank you very much. Very humbling, humbling acknowledgement. Thank you so much.
So before we go on to the discussion topic for the night, I want to go back to the Peace Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And can you just explain to the listening audience what that is?
Absolutely.
You talked about the time frame, but just kind of like what you were doing and, mm-hmm. and how that actually ends up representing service.
Absolutely. And so when I first got the notion of applying to Peace Corps, I'll say being from where I am from and growing up in Mobile, I didn't have many persons to seek out help or advice from.
Right.
I knew based on my research that it gave me the opportunity to serve internationally. And for a very long time, I've always wanted to visit and or live in the continent of Africa.
Okay.
Being a person of color, being a black woman, I have always wanted to see with my own eyes if the narrative that is painted was a true one.
Okay.
And so I've always sought out and wanted to go to the continent of Africa. And being a person of minimal means, I didn't know how to get there.
Okay.
So began searching and doing some research in undergraduate, stumbled upon Peace Corps, didn't really have many people to reach out to kind of see what that experience was like, but applied anyway.
Okay.
And after I applied and after I was accepted, I would tell people about it, and they immediately said, is that a branch of the military?
Right.
The word corps, you know, tends to throw people off. And so I would say, no, it is a service element. It's a service organization. And essentially, Peace Corps is an organization that falls under the Department of State that serves as a means for the United States to have ambassadors across the world. And so non-political ambassadors,
mm-hmm.
service ambassadors that are professionals that have reached at least an undergraduate degree or more.
Okay.
They are Peace Corps volunteers that have undergraduate degrees all the way to PhDs. But essentially, Peace Corps is an organization for professionals by request of the partnering country
mm-hmm.
To serve in communities of need and in sectors of need.
Okay.
So dependent upon the country and what that country needs are what positions are available.
Okay.
So in Botswana, you can volunteer in several different sectors. You can be in the education sector, the health sector, local government, mm-hmm. or education. And so I was privileged enough because I had background in the social sector. I had worked with several nonprofits. I was able to work in the nonprofit sector in Botswana.
Oh, wow.
And was given the privilege to serve as a sexual and reproductive health program manager for young girls, kind of navigating the pathways of reproductive health and safe sex and what that means for their self-equity and self-worth.
You know, and it's interesting to think about as we segue to the discussion topic of the evening. I have these moments periodically, and it really hit me in 2017 when I ran for the United States Senate. When I'm sitting there at the table in the house that I grew up in,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking about this journey and how
mm-hmm.
far we've come. And so could you imagine your ancestors thinking about you being selected as a Peace Corps volunteer and traveling to Botswana? It's amazing to think about.
It is. It's funny how once you achieve something, it seems less of a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side of it, sometimes if you're not intentional, it seems less of an achievement.
Of course.
I cannot comprehend what my ancestors would say. I would hope that I'm making them proud to kind of pay homage to that famous quote. But I think that I'm only doing what I was called to do, what pathways were set aside for me. I'm standing on the backs of those that made a way. And so I think it's just a natural continuum of the steps and the paths that were laid ahead of me. And so what I'm able to do is only in connection to what they were able to do.
Of course, of course.
Absolutely.
So as we continue to pull that thread, I find it interesting the intersection of what we were doing at Kennedy, Alabama, from the perspective of service, starting with military, segueing now into civilian service, leaving. I started the conversation looking back and kind of pulling that to the present day. In light of what you do in your day job, being a diversity coordinator, University of South Alabama College of Medicine, what do you see as the opportunities that we have to improve going forward? And how are you kind of weaving that into what you do on a daily basis?
Absolutely. So after the Peace Corps, I returned July 2018.
Okay.
Upon my preparation for returning, I knew I needed to come home to a job.
That would help.
That would help a lot. And I was doing research. I had a master's in public admin with a minor in social engagement and community engagement. So I knew that I wanted to do nonprofit work, especially with the experience and the academic professional training that I had. I knew that was what I wanted to do. Had never thought of higher education. Never thought of it. But this position came up around the same time that I was looking for the job.
Okay.
I was familiar with South. I had, you know, it had been my playing ground for a while through undergraduate. And so it seemed like a good fit. I knew that I could do the work.
Okay.
But had never thought about higher education until then. And now, thinking of opportunities to move forward, I can see no other greater opportunity than the education system.
Okay.
In my work, I see the vast disparity in what our students are learning.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And how they are being prepared for professional careers or lack thereof.
Now, when you talk about this preparation, are you saying it from the perspective of the medical school or what folks are doing in primary and secondary education?
Okay. And so basically, the foundation that is laid in primary onward, K through 12, is what allows students to either thrive in medical school or lack thereof. And so I'm able to see when I have students who come to me interested in the College of Medicine, and just to reiterate, my job is to help increase the number of underrepresented in medicine persons at the USA College of Medicine.
Got it. Got it. So we are just about to the end of this particular segment. So just keep that thought in the back of your mind, and we will pick back up the conversation when we come back from our last break.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Lines are open at 251-343-0106. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. So before we went to the last break, Loren and I were talking a little bit about her current role and what her charge is to help increase the number of underrepresented people of color in the medical profession. So tell us a little bit more about that.
So definitely, my job is to help recruit and support those that are considered underrepresented. And so that might mean race, gender, ethnicity underrepresentation. It might mean students from rural backgrounds underrepresentation in the medical school. So anyone who's typically left out of those classes, when you go into the doctor's office or you go into your clinics, and you see a generational kind of missing picture, who's not there?
Right.
That's who we're recruiting for. And so I do that through speaking to high school students all the way up to undergraduates as they prepare for medical school.
Okay. So you actually made me think of something as you were going through that. And I don't know how deep we'll be able to get into this in the time that we have left. but this concept of affirmative action.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So typically when I've had this conversation in integrated audiences, there's a natural assumption that the focus on diversity somehow means a person is less qualified or not qualified, right? Mm-hmm. Levy, do you have any thoughts on that, anything from your experience?
I think we likely have all been in those circumstances,
mm-hmm.
right, leadership,
right.
Management when we hire people. But again, to me, it falls back on those perceptions,
right.
People living in those circles that they rarely ever step out of. You know, there are brilliant people everywhere.
Right.
But you have to understand that to learn that brilliance, you've got to have that level of communication with that person as well. And mm-hmm. you can see the things they actually bring to the table. But again, when a person feels as though something is being taken away from them,
right.
they become protective. So versus trying to learn the specialness of that person, they automatically go on the defense. So I've seen it plenty of times, as well as I'm sure you have as well.
You know, it's interesting because I was thinking about not only the recruiting, but also the supporting mm-hmm. aspects of diversity. And the example that popped into my mind was when I was on staff at the Naval Academy. And I actually got called in to a meeting where they were evaluating the barbering function. And they were specifically looking and trying to make a decision as to whether or not to retain the African-American beautician that did the African-American female's hair on staff. And so let me just put this in context with you. So my class of 1992, there were 1,010 graduates of the Naval Academy. There were 40 African-American men. There were 5 African-American women, right? So if you were looking at it from an analytical standpoint, you would talk about the cost to do a head of hair and the number of people who are done. Mm-hmm. Those numbers seem relatively small. But what we had to add to the conversation was the idea that you've gone through all this recruiting effort to find the best people in the country to mm-hmm. be able to come here.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't support them with a beautician,
mm-hmm.
then your ability to retain that person and ultimately
Absolutely.
Have them become officers in the United States Navy, United States Marine Corps is challenged.
It's mm-hmm. not enough to get people to the table. People have to feel like they are needed, wanted, and deserve to be there.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So just kind of opening up the conversation and thinking about where we go from here, the headlines that I chose to start the hour were very intentional.
Mm-hmm.
There was a headline about housing, Josephine mm-hmm. Allen housing project that mm-hmm. recently got torn down. There was one about sentencing in the case of an excessive sentence. So a person who had been arrested on a misdemeanor actually gets 12 additional years because he had a cell phone with him. And then the final issue was the issue of Confederate monuments.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about the dreamer and the dream and where we are now and any of those topics, do you guys have any thoughts about how we can approach them, you know, to facilitate understanding and ultimately kind of propel us forward? Any thoughts?
Well, I'll just jump in. Whenever I'm told or have the opportunity to reflect on Dr. King's legacy, being a millennial, I have to look at it from a different perspective.
Okay.
I have to look at it post-death
mm-hmm.
and what we've learned. I have no context to truly feel or understand the means of which his words were written, the experiences
right.
that he felt, or those that were living that truth during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was reflecting for this conversation, one theme that kept popping up in his words was his disgust of the moderate.
Okay.
And he spoke vigorously about, for him, he was more against the moderate who preferred political equality over justice.
Okay.
In that they were over analytical and trying to see all sides aside from the side of justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that those headlines that you mentioned spoke to things that might seem more extreme.
Right.
From the Confederate monuments to the sentencing. But if I were to reflect and think about a way forward, I think the moderate, those who for example, when I was serving in Peace Corps, and I was serving during 2016, I started my service during 2016. And for those that were kind of politically aware and kind of watching the news, the 2016 was almost a red summer for black men.
Okay.
And police brutality.
Right.
Over 5 men were killed that summer. And so mm-hmm. for someone who saw that abroad, it was a pain that I can't really articulate.
Okay.
Seeing those deaths of those men in America while I was living and trying to represent the America that killed them was a very, very contrasting feeling.
Right.
I would have white colleagues, and Peace Corps is a predominantly white organization, come to me and give me hugs and try to support, but would never speak out publicly about the pain that I was feeling.
So this actually brings up a very interesting point. When you talk about moderation, and this is both within our African-American community and also in our relationship with the white community as a whole, the core problem that we have in both of those is a lack of trust. And that lack of trust has been reinforced by generation after generation after generation of actually activities. And so, as you mentioned, it's one thing for a person to come up and give you a hug to show that they're empathizing with you.
Correct.
But it's another thing for them to be marching down the street with you
when you're
actually in protest. And that's not to say that that's going to be the technique that everybody uses, but when there is a willingness to speak out about injustice, and not only injustice that impacts you as an individual, but one that actually impacts a community that may not be someone that you interact with in every day.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, leaving. Got just a few minutes left before the show ends. Any final thoughts?
Listen, great show. Great show tonight. I just want to, as we step into the, in my opinion, the greatest weekend of the entire year, the King Weekend, I just want to ask everyone to, and challenge everyone to reflect on the shoulders which whom they stand upon. No one has arrived where they are today without assistance from someone.
Right.
And when we're talking about King's Weekend, we know without a shadow of a doubt where their support comes from. So that's my encouragement for the night.
Yeah, and whenever anyone asks me how they can get a better understanding of what is going on, I always respond with talk less and listen more. So with that, we've come to the end of this week's Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Thank you for having me.
And we will look forward to having you listen to our future episodes. Until then, this is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama.